Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, a deep dive on who we are becoming as a nation. Eugene Robinson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post columnist, who you may know best these days from MSNBC, takes a look at the four main groups of black Americans in a new book and why those distinctions matter. It's called Disintegration, the Splintering of Black America. Eugene Robinson, thanks so much for joining us here on WNYC.
Great to be back, Brian. Good to talk to you.
We always hear about the importance of black unity for political and social progress. So why did you write a book dividing the community into four groups?
Well, I'm just trying to describe what I see and what I think already exists. So I'm not trying to create lines where they weren't already. But I just think that black America has become much more diverse than it was 40 or 50 years ago, more diverse economically, culturally, socially, geographically, and I think it serves us ill if we fail to recognize what it really is rather than what we prefer to think it is.
So let's go through your four groups. They are certainly all present in large numbers in the New York area. You call them mainstream, abandoned, transcendent, and emergent. Who's mainstream?
Mainstream is a majority of African Americans, a fairly slim majority, but a majority nonetheless, who have reached the middle class, who have not over the past 40, 50 years have made enormous progress in terms of income and education by any measure, and who have not yet reached full, it's not full income parity and certainly not full parity in terms of wealth with the larger society, but who are doing fine and who have inculcated middle class values and habits and so forth. So that's the mainstream group. Then there's another very large group, a too large minority that I call the abandoned, the people who did not make the leap to the middle class and who are left in decaying neighborhoods or shoved out of those neighborhoods when they gentrify into more remote and obscure neighborhoods or who are living in rural poverty and the distance, I think, between those two groups is growing rather than shrinking.
And I feel like you wrote the book kind of on behalf of the abandoned. It's certainly a sociological, almost anthropological, journalist's take on four major groups of blacks in America. But I feel like you did this on behalf of the abandoned, and you want to draw attention to their plight. Do you think?
I do, and that's absolutely right, because they tend to be forgotten, frankly. I mean, we kind of pay lip service every once in a while, but they're literally out of sight, out of mind in a lot of ways. Crime is down in major cities, and it's not a focus of policy or the news, really, except, something happens in one of these neighborhoods, and it's a big blast for a couple of days, but there's no sustained focus on the fact that there are millions of Americans, especially millions of African Americans, disproportionate number of African Americans, living in kind of grinding, hopeless poverty and dysfunction with no plan to get them out of there, and they seem to the possibilities of kind of bootstrapping oneself up are disappearing as the economy has shifted from blue collar jobs are gone and if your choice is hanging on the corner and selling drugs versus working at McDonald's, that's a tough choice for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And that's assuming that there is a job at McDonald's to begin with. So yes, it was really to bring attention to that group more than anything else.
Listeners, we can take call. I want to take call from some of our black listeners call in and talk to Eugene Robinson. You hear what he's saying about the four major groups of black Americans. And I don't say African Americans for a reason, and we'll get to that. I'm saying black Americans on purpose. And Eugene Robinson's new book, Disintegration, the Splintering of Black America, 212-433-WNYC. And the reason I make the distinction in terminology, and tell me if you make the distinction the same way in your language, is because of the group you call emergent. You have your four groups: mainstream, abandoned, transcendent, and emergent. And emergent is largely the immigrants from Africa itself, living today, first generation, and from the Caribbean. And I think the distinction is becoming more common to say that, well, the African Americans are the people who were born here, descendants of slaves, more or less, and then there are the black immigrants. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have a settled terminology, I think, but I think yours is perfectly valid and good for the purpose of this conversation. That's absolutely right. There has been a wave of black immigration from the Caribbean and from Africa, especially, over the last 20 years. That's unprecedented, and the sons and daughters, especially, of these immigrants are having an outsized impact in the society. First of all, the cohort of African immigrants right now is the best educated group of immigrants coming to the United States right now, better educated than Asian immigrants, for example, as a whole. These are, generally speaking, tend to be in intact families, educated families that come to this country, and their sons and daughters do extremely well. If you look at, for example, entering black freshmen in the Ivy League, you see a hugely disproportionate group of kind of African surnames.
And do you bring that up partly to get at the relationship between them and the group you call abandoned?
Yes, and it's a complicated relationship at times. It's been a scratchy relationship. I've been able to observe it close up here in Washington, where the largest African immigrant group is Ethiopian, and there was a big hoo-ha over whether officially rename the big Ethiopian neighborhood center as Little Ethiopia, and there were a lot of people, kind of native-born, who objected to that and essentially said, "Well, this was our community first." So you see some you see some scratchiness there, and also around questions of affirmative action. I mean, who is it for? Is it for the descendants of slaves, or is it for people who perhaps led more privileged lives overseas and then came here?
Nadine in Marine Park, you're on WNYC with Eugene Robinson. Hi, Nadine.
Thank you. A great show, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm saying that I'm part of, like, the emergent class, and it's like this is something that I've sort of observed coming here as a really young age, that there is a definite splintering of black America. And it's when I went to law school, I went to Fordham, and when you start to look at who was in the higher education, you saw mostly black immigrants. There was the majority of the black student body that was there. And you start to make note of it in New York City, where you saw most of the black so-called suburbs, quote-unquote, mostly immigrant class, there was this big New York Times article talking about the fact that these neighborhoods are doing really well, and this is in New York City proper, and you start to see that there is a definite splintering, and it's unique in Black America that you actually know people who are sort of poor or on a higher scale and whatever else. So, I'm glad that he's actually doing this book to actually call attention to that it's not all homogeneous.
Nadine, thank you so much. Thanks. Bruce in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, Yeah. My question to you, I live in the city of Newark. I've lived here most of my entire life. You know, I have several two degrees, and I still live in my community, which is pretty much very depressed, even in spite of our Mayor Cory Booker's efforts. Many of my peers have left the city, moved into suburban areas of Newark, of New Jersey. And my question to you is, how do we affect change in the city, in the urban area here, if we're not, if our culture seems to be where we just don't work together as a group, as a team? As soon as we make any progress into the middle class, we move out of the city. Very few of us stay to try to make an effort to change the city. How do we make it a change?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's you talk about one of the main phenomena that's taking place now. Of course, it is a good thing that we have the option to move into what used to be segregated white neighborhoods. And I grew up in the South, where black people all lived in a black neighborhood, not necessarily by choice, because that's where you could live. But with new options that had to come, and good thing they came, people are availing themselves of those options. And so you see African-Americans who have the income and the education and whatever moving away. And what tends to be left is a whole bunch of poor people who don't have the resources, financial or educational, to kind of pull themselves up, and there's no rungs left on the ladder for them to climb anyhow. So that's a real problem, and I just think that distance is increasing. And first we need to recognize it before we, and then maybe we can start working on ways to try to bridge it.
Bruce, thank you. Do we see that distance at all in the recent defeat of Washington Mayor Adrian Fenty, who, you know, I didn't follow that closely. I'm in New York, but from what I read, who got defeated in part for being seen as not black enough.
Yeah, that's actually not, Ian, that's the storyline that's kind of become accepted. I actually don't buy it. The mayor before him, who was extremely popular, was Anthony Williams, who actually was the mayor who put the city on a firm financial footing. And he was, if acting white was a crime, he was, he committed a felony. And Fenty only a misdemeanor. I mean, Tony Williams was a great mayor, but was about the kind of nerdiest, geekiest, most quote white acting end quote mayor, and he remained popular throughout the city. So that wasn't really the issue. The issue was Fenty wasn't that good a politician, and he lost touch with his base.
John in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Gene, I really enjoy, watching you on TV.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
I'm glad that you guys actually did this because of it's like when politicians pander to the black vote, they go to black churches. They're not reaching anybody. You know, that's a small minority of people who they're talking to. I think, that until you recognize there's a difference, you're going to be following the stereotype. So I'm glad you did this piece, Gene.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Is it fair to say that no matter the differences between these four groups of black Americans that you outline, in partisan terms, 90% plus in all four groups vote Democratic as opposed to Republican?
Yes, certainly in the aggregate, that's certainly true. I believe if you looked, for example, at the immigrant group solely, I think you would still find a majority voting Democrat, but not as big a majority. I wish the Republican Party would make a play for African American votes, make a serious attempt to attract those votes, because competition is a good thing. And I don't think any Republican candidate is going to draw more votes than, in 2012 than the first African American president seeking reelection. That's kind of a special case. But in general, if Republicans were out there offering ideas and solutions and that were attractive to African Americans, I think there would be competition that would be healthy for the country and certainly healthy for the community.
Michael in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Eugene Robinson. Hello.
Yeah, hi. What I want to say is this: segregation really is not a bad thing, and as far as I'm concerned, I think it's a good thing for black communities, providing we have equal access to resources. If we have equal access to resources, then segregation is not a bad thing. What happened with integration, we see a migration of wealth from the black community to all these other races. And, you know, we kind of lost our independence and our self-reliance, you understand? And the cooperation between blacks working among each other has, you know, like disappeared over the years as we begin to integrate more with other races. So I think getting back to living among ourselves and doing for ourselves is not really a bad thing, and I'm all for it. You know, and I don't see why we place this emphasis on people living with each other. Why do we have to live with each other anyway? You understand? All we need is equal access to resources.
Michael, how do you react to this? And I realize you're making a larger point, but there's segregation and there's segregation. John Edgar Wideman, professor at Brown, has an op-ed in the New York Times today about riding the Acela from New York to Providence, and the seat next to him stays empty the whole time. He says white people are still going to go sit next to other white people.
Well, what is wrong with that? You tell me. I don't see anything wrong with it. You cannot force people to sit beside who they want to sit beside or to talk to. I mean, it's being unpleasant a crime. If you decide to sit beside a white person, is that wrong? If I decide to sit beside a black person on the bus, is that wrong?
Michael, thank you. I'm going to get Gene's reaction, too. And in this case, Gene, I guess, lucky for black people, they get to sit by themselves on the Acela.
I don't. You know, I wish.
Doesn't happen to you.
I wish I had John Edgar's experience, but when I ride the Acela, it seems like, I'm the first in the seat next to me, and I have long legs, too, but somebody always comes and sits in it.
You have a benign, friendly face. give me a thought before we go about the black community and sprawl, the dislocation. I mean, you're talking about the concentration of poverty in the abandoned inner city. But, again, to reference something in the New York Times today, there's a piece about how the poverty rate is increasing faster in the suburbs than in the cities.
Right.
And poverty is migrating.
Exactly.
And I wonder what you think about that and whether you think that federal transportation policy, which historically has privileged the building of highways to the detriment of urban transit systems, plays a role.
Well, I think that policy has played a role, Brian, and you see it in Washington as traditional black neighborhoods that were decimated in the riots in '68 and went way downhill have gentrified and have become trendy and mostly white, and the people who lived in those neighborhoods were kind of pushed further to the periphery and finally to some of the inner suburbs which are and those are becoming the kind of concentrated centers not just of black but also of Latino poverty. Suburban jurisdictions really aren't prepared to deal with that. Sprawl is contributing. It contributes in another way too, because as poor people get kind of pushed to the periphery, they're in these little nooks and corners. They're kind of out of sight, out of mind, you know. And so now you can drive all the way down, you know, through Washington without seeing, without seeing the kind of poverty that you used to see, and it doesn't have to spoil your day to realize that there are poor people living here.
Eugene Robinson, you can read him in the Washington Post, you can see him on TV, and now you can read his new book, Disintegration: The Splintering of Black America. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.